we can kind of see the decay rate of all of the rings around Saturn. It cannot be billions of years old and still have those. That had to be recent. Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney, science geek, Bible student, amateur comedian. Fred, it is great to be back with you talking about real science on Friday.
So today we have a great guest back with us, Dwayne Bartley. You were with us last October and we talked about the dangers of settled science. And, you know, we really only scratched the surface with you, Dwayne. So we wanted to bring you back because this topic deserves a lot more justice than we gave it. So, again, it's great to have you here in studio with Real Science Radio.
I love it. Thanks for having me back. It's been great. I was warned that both my wife and my daughter said that you two are a bad influence on me because you didn't control my squirrel chasing at all. And
well, we'll see what we do about that this show. So we've got our squirrel catchers out there ready.
Squirrel traps everywhere.
There you go, squirrel traps.
Yeah.
Hey, before we get started, though, tonight at Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, Dr. Danny Faulkner will be presenting. We don't know what his topic is. It's kind of a mystery, but he will be there, and we're looking forward to it. And not only that, which I think is even more exciting, the next night, Saturday night, Dwayne, you are hosting Dr. Faulkner. You've gone out and rented two real powerful telescopes. So all of those listening on KLTT AM 670 in Denver, it's the lunchtime right now, you're driving or you're at work, put it on your calendar and go to the website, youngearth.org, and you can get directions to Dwayne's house. And just everybody pile on down there. They got plenty of room. I've been there. It's awesome. It's out towards, what is it, kind of Bennett, roughly?
Yeah, kind of not quite. It's in Watkins.
So it's a little bit of a drive, but it's nice, and they've got plenty of space out there, and they're going to have two big telescopes. So if you want to go see Dr. Danny Faulkner and do a little bit of stargazing with someone who's an expert about the stars, it'd be great to have you join us.
Watkins. Watkins is like the perfect place to
They say it's the middle of nowhere. It's not the middle. Middle's over there. But It was funny because they were looking for a place that doesn't have a lot of light pollution. It was like, we don't have a lot of people. It's hard to have light pollution without those. So, anyway, I'm totally jazzed. As a matter of fact, that's kind of why my head has been orbiting around astronomy now for a month while we're getting ready for Dr. Danny Faulkner getting here, and I'm really excited about it. So I just thought I would, you know, since you guys invited me back, I was like, I got a great idea. And since you have the brightest audience in the world, I thought we should talk about stars.
Speaking of stars, I've been told things about stars since I can remember back to about third grade. And since you mentioned settled science, we hear all these things. We hear that term settled science. These are all wrapped up. They're all decided. They're all settled. If you have any questions about them, you're obviously some kind of crazy conspiracy theorists, because this is all settled science. And it seems to me I can document a lot of changes in the settled science just since third grade, when I started hearing about all the settled science. And examples keep streaming in every day as new data comes to light. The science changes. So how settled is all this stuff?
And Doug, just for our audience, let's make sure when you say that, you know, you were thinking about a lot of stars, we're not talking about Bob Denver, right, in Gilligan's Island. We're talking about stars in the universe.
Yes. Okay, well,
just want to make that clear.
I mean, they are. Some of them are very spacey, but that is not what we're here for.
No, I don't think I wasn't allowed to talk about Gilligan's Island in third grade. That was considered fooling around.
Once again, you guys realize we are dating ourselves. We're old. Look it up.
But what about all this settled science and all this? Help me out.
Here's a epic idea. How about we start at the beginning Where do you start? Start at the beginning.
I like it.
So one of the things that I love that's come about is the whole Big Bang Theory. And there's so much to it. But let's base this off of one common statement. It's like most of what I'm talking about doesn't come from the Christian side of science. It actually comes from the secular side of science. And I spend a lot of time reading the research papers and looking at what they're doing. But the James Webb Space Telescope has almost literally taken the entire astronomy field and just turned it upside down and shaken it a lot. So yeah. One of the first really good photographs they got of some deep space shot, they're like, they put it up there and they looked at it and they're like, well, that can't be. And I had to laugh. It's like, wait a minute. You built the satellite, you launched it, you calibrated it, you put it in orbit, you talked to it, it sent you back this picture, and you said, that doesn't work. It's like, guys, and I hate to say this, but you have no one to blame but yourself. But if you go back...
And that was settled science, right?
It was. Yeah. It very much was, and it's kind of interesting when you get down to the age of the known universe, 13.8 billion years, right? And the Earth is
I thought it was 13.6.
We're 8? Both behind because thanks to James Webb's telescope, now it's, well, they haven't settled on it, but it's somewhere in the vicinity of 26 because I'm going to go through this and I hope I got something to show you guys. But if you remember the little funnel of the Big Bang Theory, they do this depiction, right? And you see this bright star in one corner and it expands out and then it goes along and it bells out at the very end.
Oh, yeah.
And it says point zero, the beginning of the universe, the Big Bang. And over here is on that one. 13.8 billion years, right? And you look at that and you go, okay, so the rational person that doesn't usually deal with logarithmic charts says, so middle of it should be 6 billion years, six and a half, almost seven,
yeah,
right?
Oh yeah.
No, not at all. If you actually understand it, and I have tried to calculate how they came up with it, but if you look at every segmentation, it's not even logarithmic. I can't get an equation that'll meet the curvature, but nerd out for a minute. The center of that graph is about 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
What?
20 minutes of time halfway down that chart. And it talks about first subatomic particles, and then all subatomic particles are formed at about 20 minutes. And the universe is roughly 80% of the size it is today at 20 minutes. Now, that's the point I stop and I go, hold on. So it is irrational to believe that a God created the universe and everything in it in 6 days. But it's okay if it's 80% of its size and all of the particles are made in 20 minutes. I don't mean to point fingers, but huh? So, yeah, and that's one of the biggest things that go into. Here's the problem. And the really fascinating part for me was that they talk about first stars. That is a whole squirrel, and I want it full credit. I'm not chasing that one, right? But how stars formed... how stars formed is very interesting. There's a lot of good astrophysicists out there. They're like, we can't explain the first one, but after you get the first one, then you can explain all the rest coming.
Yeah, we got it down after that.
Well, Steve Martin joke, how do you make $1 million? Well, first, you need $1 million.
Now, I have a daughter who liked horses. Do you know how to make $1 million? Start with $1 billion. Anyway.
Exactly.
So what's fascinating about that chart is I took it and I actually made it linear instead of logarithmic, right? And if you look at the first galaxy's form, it's roughly around 9 billion years ago, right? You go, okay. Well, and then James Webb comes along and he says, no, James Webb found, and I didn't write it down. This is old data because James Webb keeps finding newer and newer stuff. But this one, it found one that the universe was just 300 million years old when the first galaxy formed, based on how they measure it. And you go, oh, hold on. So before the first galaxy formed about 3 billion years after the Big Bang, and now it's 300 million years.
That's not a trivial error.
That's orders of magnitude. That is
We were just a little off. Fred, if you laugh at that, that means you're not very smart. I just want people
scientific.
To know.
Yeah, I read some of your comments.
I cannot dispute. I cannot challenge settled science. No, I can't do that. In fact, Let's play this clip from Smoking DeGrasse Tyson right now.
So that when you are college educated and some institution has declared you graduated and a learned member of society, if you turn around and say, I choose not to believe this emergent scientific consensus, no, you don't have that option.
No, not only can you not question settled science, Fred, when you laugh, that's their key to look down at you as if you're some sort of moron because you laughed. But they did, and they act like the only reason you laugh is because you're too dumb to understand how their exponential error actually points to them figuring out the settled science.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll say that my studio is in Arkansas, and it's not. We're in Colorado.
Yeah, I'm fully point. Behind that. It's so many pathways you could take on that. But yeah, settled science. What's funny is they can't argue with settled science. I mean, look at in archaeology, Dr. Mary Schweitzer, she almost lost her career over her thing. And then, forgive me, the guy who found the Missoula flood, he was another one that the only reason we finally accepted his stuff is because he outlived all of his detractors. And the young students went, you know, that guy's got a point. And now all of a sudden everybody went, yes, it's true. So it's funny, back to what we were saying about how far does it move things. If you got the whole graph, it moves the first galaxies from about a third of the way across to just off of the Big Bang. And you're like, there is so much to that going like, wait a minute, galaxies couldn't have formed until way over here. Hey, but we found one, and based on its age, it has to be right there, and that's a problem.
Yeah, so what they're finding is fully formed galaxies way early in the universe. They weren't supposed to find those. They were supposed to find them, like, as infant babies.
Yeah, clouds.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. But they're finding fully formed galaxies.
From spirals to, all kinds of them.
And spiral arms that they can't explain those either, you know. But anyways, that's another squirrel.
Oh, yeah, that's, see? Quit it.
So, yeah, just so the audience knows, the James Webb Telescope has been a great friend of creationists. We predicted what it would find. It would find these codger old galaxies back where they say the Big Bang started. And it totally contradicts their paradigm.
Yep.
And it totally fits the biblical narrative.
Which just popped into my head. This is like the Wizard of Oz. Pay no attention to the book behind the curtain. We've already settled this. We're just resettling it. Yeah. What cracked me up is I was like, wait a minute. I had looked up, you know, that silly Big Bang and the funnel and all that stuff. I looked it up and it was like, the one I looked at went age of the universe. I'm like, that doesn't look like they solved it. After James Webb Space Telescope found that, they solved it. And now the middle of the graph is 3 minutes. So apparently that 17 minutes makes all the difference in the universe. Anyway. And I always go back.
You know, there's the thing with settled science. You know, Smoking DeGrasse, I'm sure the next thing he'll say is, well, you know, that's the beauty of science. It progresses and we learn things and we change things. That's the other thing that they'll pull out all the time. It's like, well, doesn't that contradict your settled science?
Hello? Position? Hello? No, Fred, if you point that out to them, that means you're not very smart.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind. Sure. Anytime you contradict or catch them in an obvious lie or something utterly hypocritical, it means you're not very smart.
Right. Keep that in mind. It's not a lie. It was just a new learning thing. If I'd have tried that when I was a kid, did you lie? No, I was learning something. Nah, you're still getting beat. But, you know, in all of this, I always go back when I do presentations on this, and I go back to Romans 1, 22 and 23, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And this is the bad thing. This is what triggers me, right? The one thing that always irritates me is when science tries to say, this is settled, they're destroying the imagination and the creativity of our younger generations. We need those kiddos, right? Absolutely. I mean, it's like, at some point, I'm either going to take up skydiving and not make it, or we're going to not be here. And it's the next generation. When you tell them, when you tell a young child, it's like, no, we already know how this happened. Is light a particle or wave? I'm sorry.
And, you know, kids will look up to their teachers. And, you know I was lied to for, I thought dinosaurs were millions of years old until I was about age 30 when I looked into it. Because the encyclopedias are never wrong. My teachers aren't wrong.
Right.
That's what kids think growing up. And, you know, it's one of the dangers, frankly, of public schools, too, because they can brainwash and teach their paradigm.
Yep.
And so many people buy into it, and then you just look at where society is today, and a lot of it, to me, goes back to taking God out of the schools and having public schools in the first place. That's our position at Real Science Radio.
If you got kids in your kids public schools,
do yourself a favor. Get them out.
I mean, our daughter went to public school, but when she came home was when the real lessons, you know, it's like we'd go through everything. So you can do it. It's not, you know, it's not like
don't
they
do
were
it.
Praising
no.
everything.
They'll flee. Just, flee. Yeah. Run. Run as fast as you can. Even if you have to drop your Bible to run faster, run away.
Buy a new one when you get to your destination, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We'll have one waiting for you. Okay. Anyway, go ahead.
That's what triggers me is it's like if you take away the curiosity and the imagination of those kids going like, no, you don't need to research that. We already know it. Mm-hmm. And here, I'm not going to tell you how to think. I'm going to tell you what to think. And that always sets me off. It's like some of the greatest things that ever led me down the career path I have in engineering and all that stuff was that those questions and not somebody not going, here, don't study that bunk. We're done with this. Moving on. And it's like,
well, wait
like
a second. Wait a second, Dwayne. Wait. Before we get to dinosaurs, I'm going to challenge you on that because in Hail to Grass Tyson, he says that that's what we're doing. When we tell kids, don't think about any of that, God did it. That's what they accuse us of doing. So how do we defend ourselves against that accusation?
Well, okay, I would have to divide people at this line. And it's like my brother and his family, I chased down the nerd world, right? And they're not, and I can glaze over their eyes in less than 15 minutes, right? And they are of the opinion of God said it, I believe it, that settles it. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that perspective.
Yeah, you could even leave out the I believe it part.
Well, and then there's people that are just scientifically curious, right? And they're like, okay, that there's got to be more to it. Hey, and the Bible says right in it, it's like, it is the glory of God to conceal a thing, and it is the honor of men and kings to discover that thing.
There
and
you
so
go,
brother. Some of us nerds... That's what I love to do, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people, it's like somebody I once worked with brought up something. I was like, do you know why it does that? And they're like, no, I like the fact that it's a mystery. Leave it alone. I don't want to know. And he ran away.
That's exactly it, Dwayne, is that it is one of the reasons God created us. And it's right there in the beginning of the Bible. The way when someone accuses me of brainwashing kids with God, I like to point to the story in Genesis in the Garden of Eden where the first thing God did was see what Adam would call the animals. God actually created us to discover, explore, and discover his creation and figure it all out. That was part of who we are and what this whole thing is about. And explaining to children the reality of where it all came from is actually helpful in starting them out in the right direction as they explore.
I agree. Yeah.
And we like to say, you know, think critically. If you take anything away from this show, look at all sides so that you can make an informed decision.
Yeah,
it's like the Bereans, you know, they searched the scriptures to prove that these things were so. We don't want you just to take our word for it either. You know, and occasionally, it's very, very rare, but we occasionally make mistakes, like someone on a few of the interesting facts. that happens. But we want you to think critically, bottom line.
Yeah. And I mean, that is the danger of today's school. It's like they tell you what to think instead of how to think. And I have to, when I do my classes,
there you go.
I have to spend a fair amount of time teaching critical thought. It is, and it's not intuitive. It's not like you're stupid because you can't think critically. It is hard. Mm-hmm. And in my world, doing failure analysis in the engineering level, it's really hard to think critically and go like, is there anything else that can contribute? Take in every single side, learn stuff that you did not go to college for. And now I have to go back to college to learn that so I can aspect. But anyway, it was funny. You brought up about the animals, right? God created them all and Adam got to name them all. You know, you can't tell exactly which order he named them in. But you can get there because God said, look, I created all these and you have to name it. So he started out with, you know, like elephant, giraffe, rhinoceros. You can tell when he got to the end too. Oh, he probably crossed a ridge line and then there's the whole line of animals. Oh, no, I'm going to be here all day. Dog, cat, rat, bat.
That's pretty good. Well, so this, speaking of interesting fact, this is probably a good time to throw in the interesting fact of the week.
Oh, no.
This one won't be, I don't think it's too
tough.
I'm not going
to try and answer it this time.
This one isn't tough. You've got like seven choices, basically, primary color.
Oh, good.
Okay, so Doug, are you ready for the interesting fact?
I'm ready, Freddie.
All righty. So here is the interesting fact of the week. What is the first primary color that a newborn baby sees?
The first primary color. Primary color. Well, so first of all, Fred, I would have to remember what are the primary colors. I want to file.
Just a color, the color that you
know. No, I'm filing an official complaint that you asked me a two-part question when you know that usually I can't even get through the one-part question. The first primary color that a child sees, I'm going to go for the obvious because it's the first one, Fred, red.
I was going to give you a clue. It's the button I usually get to hit, this red button here, where it goes. But that's not it. You actually are correct. I get to hit the green button.
So whoever came up with the RGB scale, is it RGB? No.
Roy G. Biv. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet.
Correct.
Yeah, RGB. But
that's a good segue into Real Science Radio's first ever book is coming out soon. Jesus,
that's right,
and design. We're going to have a hardcover version, paperback. We expect copies start arriving by the end of this month. And if you've pre-ordered Walt Brown's 9th edition,
yes,
you will get this book thrown in for free. You'll get the hardcover.
Hardcover
version. That you'll get that thrown in with the 9th edition. And by the way, we announced this last week. The 9th edition was delayed, unfortunately, but we have good word that it's being printed right now, right, Doug? And we're expecting it in mid-June.
Mid-June, yes, that is
all right,
the latest. You're
our liaison.
Speaking of facts that tend to shift, the publication of the 9th edition has has been an interesting adventure. But you know what it is? It's just more evidence that we live in a fallen world and we all need Jesus to save us from ourselves. That's
absolutely.
But we're almost there, at least with the 9th edition, and yeah.
June, and again, we'll throw in this extra
yes,
book for you
for the long wait. We apologize.
Ooh, okay, one squirrel. But I'm going to stay with this squirrel, and we're going to track this right. Red.
Okay.
Bringing up red light. It is. I don't know if you guys know this. It is one of the primary methods they use. Red light is one of the primary things they use to determine distance of celestial objects.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of red shift?
Yes.
Yeah, I have heard of that, but I've always been a little fuzzy on how that works.
Well, I picked one. I get one. This one's all mine. All right. So red shift. I mean, in short, what it means is, you know, they talk about the fabric of space-time. And as light is traveling and the fabric of space-time is expanding, like they say the universe does, then it actually extends or stretches the wavelength, right? As you stretch any given wavelength, basically as it gets longer and the waves get further, you're shifting towards the red. Now, interesting nerd fact, there's also blue shift on things that are moving towards us really quickly. We actually see their colors shift towards the blue. Now, I won't go in depth on how this works, but just know if there were an orange star out there and we look at it and say, no, I'm guaranteeing you that is red. Sort of how it works. You can actually determine the wavelength of particular atoms, and you can run it through a prism, like your book shows, and you can break it up into its individual component wavelengths, right? And what they looked at was basically hydrogen produces these 5 absorption lines. And they went, wait, that's a star. It burns hydrogen. That's the rules. That's just what it works on. It doesn't work off calcium. It doesn't work off plutonium. It's hydrogen. But they would look at it, and they would break down the wavelength, and they would be shifted. So it's got 5 absorption lines, but they're not at the same frequency as the ones that when we look at our sun. And they're like, so it shifted to the red. Okay. The greater the shift, the more space it traveled through that stretched, and therefore the greater the redshift. So you go, that's good science. I mean, that's, again, I have to say from the last time, it's like, we're not knocking the science. There's excellent science out there and they're brilliant scientists. And this is one where the science is good, but here's an interesting one. W.G. Tiff in 1937 said, wait a minute, redshift, we determine how far things are away from each other. And he got upset at what later became the catalog, like the Sears catalog, of redshift anomalies. And there's a lot of them.
Yes.
And what's fascinating about it is basically is they discovered that redshift is quantized. Now, yes. What that means is it shifts. And I got a graph here that I'll share with you guys. It means that if we just look at all the stars, we find a lot of stars at a given distance and a lot at another given distance. And it's periodic. Every so many such and such wavelength, you'll find a lot of stars at that. And so it's this very, stars are largely in this area. It doesn't matter which way we look either. You can look all the way around the planet, 360 by 360, and you go, we've got these quantized redshifts. Now, what's really cool to me is what that means is we're in the center of the universe.
Yes.
That's what it would lend itself to. And isn't that a fascinating thought? Because here's the reason I say that. So did some math on this, right? If you take, let's imagine that you're in this, what do they call those nesting dolls, right? If you're in a stack of nesting dolls, spheres. Right? Park it in the middle and you go measure to all of these stars. And it's like this first sphere is all this far away. And you go out to the next one, they're all this far away. Now take your measurement point that was in the center of all those spheres and just scooch it one direction. And then remeasure all the distances to all those stars. And now that graph of the distance to all the stars levels out and you just get everything all over. So if you move by just, 2 million light years, which galactically really doesn't mean that much to move it 2 million light years. And everything shifts, which is kind of odd because that kind of means it would indicate that we may be in the center of the universe. Well, not us, but.
Here's a tease for you for the book, okay? Because we cover that.
Oh.
Yeah. But here's a really interesting thing that Barry Satterfield stumbled onto, and we're hoping others can confirm this. Those same quantized distances match electron orbit spacing. Have you heard about that?
I have.
And so that could be, if that's confirmed, I mean, that's huge. That would be huge, because then it can't be a coincidence.
Can't be.
And it would point to more of a plasma universe, and again, that would be a massive squirrel. Bigger than any squirrel we've had in the show yet. So we won't go there.
Next time.
It's kind of a tease for the book that you get to read about both of these. So I know Dr. Humphreys was really good in documenting the quantized redshifts from other scientists. And he's like, hey, wait a minute. If this is true, this is kind of showing we're in the center of the universe. But anyways, it's really interesting science.
Well, gentlemen, before I allow you to move on, I am obligated to slap your wrists asserting that Earth might even be close to the center of the universe is one of the biggest intellectual faux pas one can make in public. It's almost as bad as laughing as Neil and Hale deGrasse Tyson. It's almost that bad. It almost rises to the level of saying something negative about Bill Nye, which I know neither one of you want to cross that line. I dare you.
Dwayne, shut up. Now, I don't know how they can base that because, I mean, I don't watch a lot of it, but if you watch a lot of the, celebrities, I'm pretty sure they think they're in the center of the universe. Yeah, for the editors, I have a cool picture that actually I did that. I created it, and they matched the orbital rings of an atom, and then I had it overlay that over a stellar.
Oh, you did? Okay,
so
cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you're listening on the radio, you'll have to go watch the YouTube version of this show to see that graph.
Yeah, it's really neat. But, to be honest, I mean, I don't know if you know this. We, Denver, we're not the center of the universe. But apparently, if you go to Wallace, Idaho, they have selected the center of the universe. And it is on Harry F. Magnuson Way. And they even have a brass plaque the size of it is a manhole cover. It says, this is the center of the universe. So apparently we are here.
How does that jibe with the Copernican principle, which I will read from Copilot Search. So this is AI, so we better watch out. It could be wrong.
Careful.
The Copernican principle asserts that Earth and its observers are not in a privileged or unique position in the universe, implying that our observations are representative of the cosmos as a whole. So what are your thoughts?
So I'm going to cheat, and I didn't use AI. I actually read this one. This is from quantized redshifts, what's going on here, published in 92, and I know that's old, it says, and I quote, quantized redshifts just don't fit into this view of the cosmos. They imply concentric shells of galaxies expanding away from a central point, Earth. Even though more recent redshift data has supported the notion of quantized redshifts, cosmologists find them undigestible, even pathogenic. And then Knapler and Guthrie said the redshift distribution has been found to be strongly quantized in a galactocentric frame of reference. The phenomenon is easily seen by eye and apparently cannot be ascribed to statistical artifacts. Selection procedures are flawed reduction techniques.
Okay, so undigestible, is that a scientific term?
Well,
I mean, we're talking about stars. It sounds like a lot of gas.
You hear those kind of exclamations from these scientists, you know, that's horrendous. You know,
pathogenic.
The 47% difference of the Y chromosome was not totally unexpected. That it was a horrendous difference. It wasn't an interesting difference. We were wrong. No, it's horrendous because it shatters my worldview. This here shatters their worldview on how they viewed the universe, and it's undigestible.
It is. You know? And if you ask me, I mean, we are talking about stars. It just sounds like a lot of gas. Here you go. I got one from Edward Hubble, The Observatory Approach to Cosmology, Oxford, 1937. So this is not a new idea. We're almost 100 years away from this. Such a condition, these redshifts, would imply that we occupy a unique position in the universe. But the unwelcome supposition of a favored location must be avoided at all cost. It is intolerable. Moreover, it represents a discrepancy with the Big Bang theory because the theory postulates homogeneity, meaning everything everywhere. I love that.
Wow.
So that's how you get a telescope named after you, is you stand up that strong.
You have to be
the
disgusted with what you find.
He didn't want to go against the Smoke and DeGrasse Tysons of his day. He didn't want to go against settled science. It wasn't digestible, and it wasn't,
And right there, we just witnessed, I mean, this was from Edwin Hubble. Mm-hmm. Here's exactly what you see. We love science and everything from nothing, but what we find is undigestible. It's like, well, then you better get dentures.
Well, I thought those on his side, they're supposed to be tolerant. So he says we're intolerant of that.
And it does. Those are the things. And it's like, it does kind of frustrate me because I consider them good, intelligent people. But when you find the results and you go, I don't want to look at that. I don't want to admit that, you know? Yeah. And they go like, well, the things that we find that align with my worldview, those we'll put in the book. All this other stuff we find, well, we just haven't figured out how to change it to, you don't get me started on global warming. Anyway, as long as we're talking about things that don't match settled science, I mean, this is what is in textbooks, but also the data that has been found that scientists have a hard time with this. So I'm going to hit these in semi-rapid fashion. If we bring all of this in, it's hard to make these statements about the universe and everything even outside the Milky Way galaxy, right? But let's just play around and bring it back in closer to home, Earth, the sun. I'm going to hit these in rapid fashion, but I'm going to show you all the things that don't match the settled science that we found just in the planets that are here.
So just in our solar system.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Mercury, it was said that it would have a rocky mantle and a solid core. Of course, 78% of the planet's radius, the core is, think about that, 70% of its mass and its molten iron. The theory dictated it to be light and fluffy, 75% iron. Theory predicted that Mercury would be old, cold, and dead because it's too small to hold the heat. It wouldn't do anything. It'd be static, right? It can't have a magnetic field based on that if it's old, cold, and dead. When we visit it, however, it has a strong magnetic field indicating a hot liquid iron core, and it's decaying. So we go back and we check it again. So back to good science. It's decaying. Huh. Run that clock backwards and see where it goes. So, large deposit.
Not very far, and again, fits within a biblical time frame. We're not saying it shows it's exactly 6,000-7,000 years. It's well under even millions, right? I mean, it just doesn't work for their paradigm.
Exactly. There are large deposits of volatile elements, which doesn't match the way they say the solar system formed, then found all over the planet, which contradicts the nebular hypothesis, which is that form, right? And especially the large impact theory. So the way they fix it, the large impact theory. It's the only way it could happen. It got hit by something that was mostly iron that melted everything, and it became its core, and that's why it's still magnetic.
Hold on. How does it explain them? Some of them spinning the opposite direction?
Yeah, right. So that one's next. Okay. That's Venus, right? Nice job. I didn't even prep you on that. Here's the theory. Venus is Earth's sister, should have the same composition, should have tectonic plates, and a moon. Venus has none of the above. The theory predicted that Venus would have a magnetic field like Earth. When we visited, Russians beat us to it. No magnetic field. None, right? Based on crater rate, the surface of Venus looks very young. Estimates vary, but the average age of materials on Venus is almost certainly less than 1 billion years and may, in fact, be substantially less. The makeup of Venus is nothing like Earth. Sulfuric acid atmosphere, no water, not a sister. Guess how they fixed that? Large impact. It got hit by something that took out its moon and created the atmosphere it has.
I thought they already used that one on Mercury. You can't use that one again, can you? Is that allowed?
Hold that thought. So, Mars. Is there water on Mars? Water can't exist on Mars today. If it was completely flooded, where did it go? Because now they look at Valles Marineris. Mars used to be covered in water. And I love how they do that. And they say, yeah, but Earth never had a global flood when we're like 78% covered in water. And if you bulldozed our planet totally flat, not only would water cover the entire Earth, it'd be 2 miles deep on average.
Yep. Hey, we've got a really quick 30-second short on the water on Mars. Let's run that. Atheists reject a global flood on Earth, but did you know that they believe one happened on Mars? The Earth is 70% water. Mars is 0% water.
That was perfect. Got it. Okay. So here's a weird one. 93% of the craters on Mars are in one hemisphere. Do the math on that. Statistically, how would that be? It would appear that over 80% of them occurred within a single half hour.
Okay.
Indications, not proof, right?
Yeah. Does the hydroplate theory ring a bell here, anybody? Yeah. Okay, anyway.
Very nice.
Squirrel.
Squirrel! Yeah. Okay, so Jupiter, I love this one. Right? Jupiter is a huge planet and needs a lot of materials, and the model does not provide for how it got out there. That big, that much stuff out in the nebular hypothesis, it would have been tough. The model says simply, if Jupiter was not observed, it would not be predicted to be there. And I actually have the astronomers that said that. And you're like, ouch, that had to hurt.
Remember the one about the moon is like, it doesn't exist.
The moon shouldn't be there.
It shouldn't be there.
There's the three theories on the moon. You know, squirrel, stop it. All right. Craters and surfaces of the moons on Jupiter bring the entire age and crater theory into question. Some of them are smooth, and there's reasons why, and there's theories, and some of them are good. But, okay, doesn't match the model. Here's the really wacky one. Jupiter doesn't have a core, not the way we think of it, where it's a solid point in the middle and they can shoot it and see it and come back because it's a gas planet, right? Instead, it has this fragmented pieces. Guess how that happened?
Something called a big impact theory?
Yes.
No.
And here's the really cool thing. It hit Jupiter so fast, so hard, and with such velocity, they hit it dead on in the center. This is their theory, not mine. That it drove all the way through the planet, hit the core, and fragmented it. And that's one of them. They all argue it. You know, the only thing you can get two astronomers to agree on is what the third guy got wrong. I won't go into all the moons of Jupiter, but there's a ton of them there. All right, then let's go to Saturn, right? Saturn has a highly symmetric magnetic field about the rotation of its axis, which violates the theory of magnetic dynamos. Odd. And the ring should not be there. It shouldn't be that old. We can kind of see the decay rate of all of the rings around Saturn. It cannot be billions of years old and still have those. That had to be recent. Yeah. And the cores of both Saturn and Jupiter should have spiraled into the sun before they were the cores of two planets. If they were that dense and that great, they should have spiraled into the sun before they created themselves as planets. And like I said, if it wasn't for the fact that we could see them, nobody would have mathematically predicted they would be there. Guess how Saturn got its rings and all that other stuff? I got an idea. I have one at the end. You'll love this. Okay, I'm going to skip the one on its moons. Here's the one I really love.
I got one. It got its rings because Jupiter proposed.
Wait, I was going to say Giant Impact. Go ahead.
I like his theory. There you go. Here's a weird one. So Uranus is one of my favorites because it's like it's tilted by a lot. Uranus doesn't spin on its axis. It's actually rotated almost 90 degrees, lays on its side and rolls around the solar system. Mm-hmm. So let's play with this theory. It's a gas giant, right? It means it's a cloud. They're like, it got tipped over by the large impact hypothesis. It got hit by something. All right. So let's just be clear here. A rock hit a cloud and tipped it over. Oh. But wait, there's more. It also tipped over its moons and its rings.
Wow.
That's one magic bullet.
That's quite a rock. Okay. So on to the next one. Neptune's the one. Now let's go on to Neptune. Neptune's really crazy because it has a magnetic field. Here's the really weird one about Neptune. It puts off energy at about twice the rate that the sun provides energy to it. So it's got to be declining, right? And if you follow that, wind the clock back, follow the physics, and that means it had to have been all but a star when it formed in order to lose that much heat energy over billions of years. And it's still putting it off at twice the energy it receives. That's odd. Winds at 1,300 miles an hour. You'd think it'd put that fire out. I'm kidding. And it has a moon called Miranda. Their best hypothesis on how it formed, because Miranda has smooth sides and crunchy sides and counted sides and cratered sides and other things. And they're like, the only way for that moon to form and look like that. Yeah, large impact. Not one. Not one, five. I'm just saying. If a good idea worked once, it's got to work better five times.
Who are you going to believe, me or your own?
So if you go through these, it's like, you know, here's the way I think the theory goes. You know, if you can't explain what you see, you guys remember Princess Bride?
Yep.
Andre the Giant. If the theory doesn't match what you said it does,
hit it with a big rock.
And I have an awesome picture of Andre the Giant holding that rock. I do not think that means what you think it means. So when we get down to it, it's settled science really isn't. It's just what we say today. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. There's two problems with it. One, you can get people that totally buy off on it. I mean, an intelligent person tells you the fact that there is a law such as gravity, well, then the universe, because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will make itself from nothing. And that came from one of the brightest minds in our age. Mm. You know, I mean, that was Stephen Hawking put that in his book. Mm-hmm. So a law created matter. What is a law? Can you put it in a bucket? How much does it weigh? Mm. But when brilliant people like that make statements like that, I don't care who you are and how many degrees you have stacked on your wall, you have to stop and think. And there's got to be common sense and a little rationality to go, this isn't it. And when you find problems, I think that's one of the greatest parts of engineering. Hey, we found a problem with our theory. Cool. Tell a kid that we don't know why this happened and you get to spend your career playing with telescopes and doing science like this, I guarantee you that kid, by the time, you know, my great-grandchildren are around, they're like, hey, guess what we found? And we think that this is the way it works. Also likely to be wrong, but we will get that much further. That's how we got to where we are. I don't disagree with Tyson in that is how science works, but to stand there and go like, and therefore we know for a fact this. No, we don't. Right. Not even close.
Exactly. So dangers of settled science.
Yeah. Yes, we only agree with the first half of what he said, that science advances through observation and new data, and we have to accept. Yeah. I'll go.
Totally agree with that. And then hit it with a big rock.
And one funeral at a time.
And one funeral at a time. Yeah. Oh, that hurts. But yes.
So. Okay. Well, Dwayne, we're pretty much out of time, but man, it was great having you back. Again, we're still only scratching the surface, but we're always only scratching the surface with the evidence for creation, the evidence against evolution. It's been disproven so many times over, so many nails in that coffin. And we've got all kinds of materials for you guys to tune into. We've got new materials coming from Real Science Radio. We've got the In the Beginning book from Walt Brown. It will be here. I don't want to promise, but we're looking at June. And by the way, his book isn't just about the hydroplate theory. There's a huge section at the beginning that covers, you know, quite a bit of some of the stuff we've talked today in past shows on just the evidences for creation and the problems with evolution.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I could probably spend another 20 minutes just talking about the moon and the three theories they have for it. And you're like, if you have three theories, that means none of them are right. Back to my previous statement.
Exactly.
There you go. So we'll give that to you.
All right. Oh, and by the way, if you want the interesting fact of the week to continue, then you can sponsor the interesting fact of the week. Just go to the website, click on sponsor, sponsor a show. You sponsor the interesting fact of the week, we give you the whole show as a bonus. You be the sponsor for the whole show. So go check
and
that out.
And by the way, we had a sponsor for this week's interesting fact, and I forgot to mention him. I'm not going to do them injustice and say it at the end of the show. I promise you we'll get you named on the next show. We have a couple of in the queue. So I blew that, but, you know, like Doug said, we're, you know, we're sinful, flawed humans.
That's right.
You know.
And so that means Fred has to pay for this week's interesting fact of the week, which doubles my satisfaction for getting it right.
Sponsor this week's show. Yep.
You know, the other thing you guys got to worry about, if somebody sponsors the question of the week, if they send in the question, you guys are going to have to study.
Hey, that might be an interesting wrinkle to add right there. Yeah. Okay. We'll take that under advisement, Dwayne.
I get a hint that maybe Dwayne might be sending in a tough question. No?
Ooh, yeah. Can I do that? My shrink says I can't talk about it, but when I took theoretical particle physics, it was like, I'm sure I could come up with a question out of that book still. I think I still have PTSD from that class.
Well, that's what we'll have to have you back, and we'll have to get into some particle physics. That sounds fun.
Exactly.
Really small squirrels.
Yeah, lots of really small ones.
Yeah, it's right. You know what particle or not. No, never mind. It's the dream stuff we're made of. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right. Okay, so for my co-host, Doug McBurney, and it's always great to have Dwayne Bartley in studio.
Thanks for having me back. This is tons of fun.
And amen. I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you. Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the hand.